Case number 22-5105. Wu Ho Freedom Foundation et al. Appellants versus United States of America and Merrick B. Garland in his official capacity as Attorney General of the United States. Mr. Cornrevere for the appellants, Mr. Busa for the appellants.
May it please the court. When it comes to regulating speed, courts don't uphold laws simply because the government promises to apply them
responsibly. Can you pull that microphone a little bit?
Would you like me to start?
That's better.
Okay.
That's better. Thank you.
When it comes to regulating speech, courts don't uphold laws simply because the government has promised to apply them responsibly. As the Supreme Court made clear in United States versus Stevens, the First Amendment protects against the government. Does not leave us at the mercy of noblesse oblige. This principle is implemented in a couple of ways. First, laws regulating speech must be drafted with narrow specificity. And second, courts exercise extreme caution when examining laws regulating what the Supreme Court has called the vast democratic forums of the internet. Various laws intended to regulate online speech have been invalidated facially applying these principles. These include the Communications Decency Act, the Child Online Protection Act, and the Child Pornography Prevention Act. Also represents the latest attempt to regulate internet speech since these seminal cases, and yet, remarkably, with one minor exception that I hope to get to later, neither the government nor the district court even cites these cases. Instead, the government treats Boston as a garden variety aiding and abetting law, without regard to whether or not it regulates speech. Now, there are a couple of problems with this. First, Bostead is not a garden variety aiding and abetting law. And the government tries to defend the statute principally by rewriting it. And secondly, even if Bostead could be so characterized, it is nonetheless constitutionally deficient because its terms are overly broad, undefined, and chill a vast amount of protected speech. And that's the other remarkable thing about this case. Foster chilling effects were predicted, they were immediate, and they were widespread across the internet. And this impact has never been disputed by the government. In fact, the district court agreed that appellant's claims encapsulate the incentives created by this section of Foster.
Well, how do we know? Your briefs and amicus briefs talk about a lot of speech that is stopped in reaction to the statute. But how do we know how much of that speech is in fact covered by the statute as opposed to, you know, risk aversionists on the part of a lot of these businesses? Because if the statute is read as essentially aiding and abetting provision, then I assume you would say your client's conduct doesn't fall, the PayPal account, the massage business ads do not fall under the statute. Has Craigslist said that all of its speech that it shut down did fall within the statute? Because that's part of the question here is whether, for overbreadth at least, whether there's substantial overbreadth. I'm not sure we can equate substantial overbreadth with substantial reactions to a statute without more. And that's where I'm really struggling to understand what is covered. If it's read as aiding and abetting provision, what is covered that shouldn't be covered?
Right. And that's the problem of using broad and expansive language that relates to speech, but then doesn't define what speech is covered. And there are three reasons why trying to interpret FOSTA as an aiding and abetting law.
Can we just get more to the practical question of, is it your view that you had two individuals here, the one who does the date, and then the one with the massage business? Is it your position that their speech is perfectly lawful under the First Amendment, yet is covered by this statute? Or they're afraid is covered by the statute.
I think that because of the indeterminate language, they can't be sure that their speech isn't covered.
And if it's read as an aiding and abetting statute, criminal aiding and abetting, would their conduct be covered?
I believe they would be acquitted, but that's part of the problem.
No, not acquitted. Would they, as a matter of law, not acquitted, would it be, you know, you dismiss the indictment on its face, right away, judge, because this is not aiding and abetting?
I do not believe their conduct amounts to aiding and abetting, but because of the way FOSTA is structured, both by using expansive language for what could be covered, as well as removing protection for intermediaries, that their speech nonetheless gets censored because people rationally react to an overly broad regulation of speech by censoring that speech. And that's what the platforms have done in response to the modifications of Section 230.
I know, but just to demonstrate substantial overbreadth. So just...
That's right.
We'll have discussions about whether it should be read this way, but let's just assume it is read narrowly as all sort of aiding and abetting conduct consistent with sort of traditional criminal law definitions of that. And to decide that it's overbroad, we can't go, well, you had big words that you narrowed down to aid and abet. You'd have to go, to establish that it's overbroad, you would have to show that even as an aiding and abetting statute, it would capture substantial amounts of lawful protected speech. So if we're in that world where it's treated as an aiding and abetting statute, how do I know that this statute would nonetheless be overbroad because it would nonetheless capture protected speech?
Well, Your Honor, let me respectfully push back on the notion of assuming that it can be interpreted as an aiding and abetting statute. Therein lies the problem.
But I know you want to push back on that, but then you're not going to answer my question, which is, I really do want to know that if we're in that world,
because
is it still substantially overbroad, or is it only substantially overbroad because of the indeterminacy of whether this is in fact an aiding and abetting statute?
The way in which statutes are interpreted gives latitude to apply beyond what is the criminal concept of aiding and abetting, and that's what's true of FOSTA. And if you compare it to all of the other statutes that have been cited by both sides, frankly, that this is substantially different from an aiding and abetting statute. And that's clear from even the language of FOSTA in Section 2421A, when you compare it to that section of the criminal code into which it was inserted. It was part of Chapter 117 of the Criminal Code governing transportation of illegal activity and related transport, the Mann Act, which has been on the books since 1910. And in every other provision, you have language that expresses what the crime is that is being prosecuted. So, for example, Section 2422B criminalizes using the mail or facility or means of interstate commerce in a way that knowingly persuades, induces, entices, or coerces any individual. Similarly, Section 2422A applies to anyone who knowingly persuades, induces, entices, or coerces any individual to travel in interstate commerce. What's missing from FOSTA in Section 2421A is that language of what the crime is that puts people on notice of what they would be aiding and abetting. The way the statute reads is to say that anyone who owns, operates, or manages, or even attempts to own, operate, or manage an interactive computer service with bad intent, with the intent to promote or facilitate prostitution, is guilty of a federal felony. And, you know, it doesn't define what speech, what actions by that interactive computer service would violate the law. It's that indeterminacy which says this can't be treated like the aiding and abetting laws that the government cites and that, frankly, we cite. We give some examples of aiding and abetting laws in footnote 9 of our brief. Every one of them includes that language that defines what the crime is. And here, it's basically speaking with bad intent. And for that reason, this isn't a garden variety aiding and abetting simply makes no sense to interpret it in that way. That's also true of the laws that the government cites under the Model Penal Code. If you look at any of those laws, they include the description of what it is that constitutes a violation. And that's the problem with overly broad or indeterminate laws that purport to regulate speech. That's the reason why the Supreme Court has always required that those laws be drafted with narrow specificity. And that's absolutely what's lacking here. The government suggests that we should interpret these laws using the rules of statutory construction. And we've done that. And when you apply the typical rules of statutory construction, none of them support the government's reading of FLOSTA. The plain meaning rule, the plain meaning of FLOSTA in case law and in legal dictionaries means to make easier, not aiding and abetting. And getting back to, I believe, your original question of why this is substantially overbroad, the government has defined what FLOSTA's plainly legitimate sweep is by constantly talking about classified ad websites and talking about Backpage.com. But as the panel of this court made clear the last time the state was before it, FLOSTA is not limited to classified advertising, and it's not limited to bad actor websites. Congress specifically chose broader language that applies to a broad range of protected speech.
How would you, this is not a rhetorical question, I'm curious, how would you write a law that does what you just said? To say we're going to outlaw bad actor websites sounds awfully vague. So maybe we'll start with this. Do you think it's possible for Congress to ban Backpage.com? Constitutionally possible?
I think it is possible to write a constitutional statute. And Judge Walker, let me say, not my job to do Congress's work, and the Supreme Court made that clear in the United States versus Playboy.
No, there was a footnote in your brief where you seemed awfully sympathetic to Backpage.com, which was a pretty nefarious website. And so I guess I'm glad to hear you say that you think Congress can ban Backpage.com. And I wonder how that law would read different than this law.
Right. And I think it would come closer to a constitutional enactment if Congress had employed the language of, say, the Travel Act or the Protect Act, where it includes these transactional verbs that were expressly missing from FLOSTA. So, for example, the Travel Act applies to acts that promote, manage, establish, carry on, or facilitate the promotion of unlawful activity.
Sorry, so if they amended 2421A, capital A, that way? If they had a longer list of verbs and the sort of act type language that they have in the companion provisions in this section, then it would be constitutional simply because we've only got promote or facilitate that is the constitutional problem.
We would have to look at the final product that Congress came up with, but that was the analysis that the Supreme Court did in Williams when it looked at the Protect Act. And it
You just said we'd have to look at the language they came up with, but Judge Millett gave you the language.
There's an echo.
No problem. And I think I might even turn this on. I don't know. If Congress wrote the same language that Judge Millett mentioned, which I think is the same language that's in the other statutes you were mentioning, would that be constitutional?
I think that would come closer because it would at least serve to narrow those terms. And the Supreme Court said, if you look at those
coming
terms,
closer isn't constitutional.
The ones that were meant to Protect Act was held to be constitutional. Mm-hmm. And it was held to be constitutional because of those additional verbs that didn't, that went beyond promote and facilitate.
So if we were to read this statute as no broader in terms of the verbs, than that statute, then I guess there would be no constitutional problem here.
Well, there would be the problem that the court would be rewriting the statute.
I know, but assume that I know you don't agree with the government's statutory interpretation argument, but if we were to interpret the statute that way, then there would be no First Amendment problem, correct?
No, I don't believe so, Your Honor, because again, for prosecutions going forward, you would still have that statutory language that courts would have to interpret.
And so then I'm back to my original question, which is it possible to write law that does not violate the First Amendment, but does ban Backpage.com?
Well, again, Congress did have the option when it adopted this law. The government has spent a lot of time talking about how we have to read the statute in light of background law. And here, when Congress was adopting FOSTA, it was reading it with a background of law under Williams that said the terms promote and facilitate standing alone in isolation are capable of widespread meanings. They then adopted to leave out those words.
This is a hypothetical, but I want to be sure we're fair to you, whoever writes the opinion. I think right now the opinion could say that the plaintiffs concede that Congress can ban Backpage.com without violating the First Amendment, but the plaintiffs cannot explain how Congress can do that.
I think if you wrote a statute that said it violates the law to operate an interactive computer service to conduct a prostitution business online, that would be a constitutional...
You're going to put an intent requirement in there too, aren't you?
With intent, yes. But I assume that...
But Backpage.com wasn't running the prostitution business. It was a board. It was the equivalent of a bulletin board for sex traffickers to advertise.
That is the allegation that is as yet to be proven at trial. The allegations that contained in the government brief continue all sorts of allegations about trafficking that Backpage was not charged with. But that, apart from that, the question is whether or not a law could be drafted. And I think it could. The transactional terms in the Travel Act talk about basically getting involved in the business or, for purposes of the First Amendment, for speech that is integral to that criminal activity. But that's not what Congress adopted.
I understand your argument there. Let me pivot to the ex post facto claim and the question of standing.
And after I answer that question, I see that I'm intruding on my time for rebuttal.
We'll give you time for rebuttal, so you can keep answering questions.
Happy to answer all your questions.
The only defendants in this suit are federal defendants. And the only parties that can bring a prosecution or a civil suit against your clients using the ex post facto language. In other words, for the conduct that your clients engaged in before FOSTA, the only people who can hold them accountable for that are state prosecutors and private civil litigants. Since the federal defendants are the only defendants in this case, how could issuing an injunction against the federal defendants help you in this area?
Well, and that's the point that we tried to make in the brief, and that is the district court dismissed that claim simply by focusing on the injunctive relief portion. But we, in our complaint, sought both declaratory and injunctive relief.
So then that leads us to the California v. Texas case that the Supreme Court somewhat recently decided, and it was pretty clear. It said that they said no standing if the only relief requested is a declaration that the statutory provisions the plaintiffs attack is unconstitutional. How do you get around that?
I think under Stockton versus California, which says that ex post facto laws shall not be passed, and that is the express provision of the Constitution, Article 1, Section 9. And combined with the language of the Declaratory Judgment Act that says that any court of the United States may declare the rights and other legal relations of any interested party seeking such declaration, whether or not such further relief is or could be sought. still leaves the court latitude to grant declaratory relief with respect to the ex post facto claim.
Imagine that, I mean, it's almost a truism that an ex post facto law can't be passed. The Constitution says it can't be passed. But the question is, who can you sue and have standing to sue to challenge an ex post facto law? And, you know, if you picked a random name in the phone book and then sued them and then argued in court correctly that you've been injured by the ex post facto law, you wouldn't have standing because the random name in the phone book that you've chosen to sue, relief against that defendant can't redress the injury that we would all concede you have from the ex post facto law.
By the same token, if Congress adopted a law that simply said the states can now pass ex post facto criminal laws, and you had to wait for a state then to adopt an ex post facto law, you have simply allowed Congress to adopt a law that is expressly forbidden by Congress.
I don't know that law is expressly forbidden because it's not an ex post facto law. And what is the harm in waiting for someone to actually do something to hurt you?
Because of the chilling effect that this has had on platforms across the internet. FOSTA doesn't operate just in isolation. It's got three different provisions that create new criminal penalties that activate the ability to impose existing state laws on behavior that existed before or took place before the law was adopted. And when you impose those, all of those conditions on intermediaries, for the maximum chilling effect. So the very existence of the law has created the chilling effect. You don't have to wait for a prosecution. And civil cases have already gone forward alleging violations of FOSTA under actions that took place before the law was adopted.
Have any state, I know one of the amicus briefs said there's only been one federal prosecution under FOSTA. I assume
that's
you mean by that 2421A, or do you even mean 1591 or 1519? When there's only one prosecution under FOSTA, does that mean one prosecution under 2421A, or does that include no prosecutions under the amendments to 1591?
I don't recall the facts of the other prosecution.
Have there been any state prosecutions under FOSTA that you're aware of?
Not that I'm aware of. Which actually speaks to whether or not this law is either necessary or even the least restrictive means of addressing the issues that Congress sought to address, both under the strict scrutiny analysis, which requires it to be the least restrictive means, and the question of whether or not it is substantially overbroad because it is more broad than necessary. The fact that those other laws preexisted.
And more broad than necessary gets us back to the how. What Congress could write. And there, I guess I want to make sure I'm clear. The main complaint with 2421A is that by using the verbs promote or facilitate prostitution, those do not have the same narrowing language as something like, you know, 2422 with the persuades, induces, entices, coerces, those types of verbs, or more transactional verbs. Like Williams. That's the problem?
Well, that's the problem with 2421A. It lacks those transactional verbs. And we've identified the overbreadth and vagueness of the other provisions as well. And then on top of that, by simultaneously stripping away immunities from intermediaries mm-hmm. carrying third-party speech, then it broadens the chilling
effect. For 2421A, I just want to make clear, the objection is just to... you would say the breadth of the verbs promote or facilitate, and it's not an objection that the only actus reus is operating an interactive computer service.
Well, that's right. And it's basically the law constitutes operating an online computer service with bad intent. And
right, that's why I thought your response would have been, no, we want more verbs and we actually would like a criminal actus reus.
Well, we want the actus reus to be defined, mm-hmm. certainly.
Well, it's defined here in 2421A, it's defined as owned, managed, or operating an interactive computer service or attempting or conspiring to do that. So there is a defined actus reus, it's just, like as you said, It's operating a computer with a bad intent.
And, Your Honor, this is why the Supreme Court has always required statutes that regulate speech to be defined with precision, because essentially this is amounts to saying that you are speaking online with bad intent. The intent is defined by
you might not even be speaking. You might just be owning a computer service with bad intent under this statute.
And thereby getting even further from the intent element, if all it is owning, or in the words of Section 2421A, attempting to own, operate, or manage an interactive computer service. All of that gets it further and further removed from actually defining what kind of speech is being regulated. That is the vice in these kinds of laws, particularly when you are regulating a medium as widespread with as many participants as the internet. Both those vague terms, both in terms of direct action and their impact on intermediaries, make for a vast chilling effect, which has occurred. And it's not just people overreacting or hallucinating that they are at risk. You have all kinds of mainline intermediaries, and you have small operators all restricting their speech because of the rational calculation that they face nuclear option criminal penalties for what they may allow to be posted online or for their own speech. And that's the problem of a law that attempts to regulate speech with the breadth and imprecision of a law like FOSTA.
And I want to make sure, because I had interrupted you, did you get to say what you wanted to say about your response to the government's argument that this should be read as an aiding and abetting statute? I want to make sure you had a chance to do that.
I apologize again, Your Honor. There's an echo.
I want to make sure you got the opportunity, because you had said you wanted to address the government's argument that this should be read as aiding and abetting language, or sort of traditional criminal understandings of promote, prostitution, or facilitate. I just want to make sure you got a chance to, because I had cut you off trying to get another answer.
I think at this point, I said what I wanted to say in response to your questions and in addition to what we said in the briefs, and I look forward to seeing what Mr. Busa has to say, because I'm sure I'll have a few words to add at that point.
Any other questions? Thank you very much. We will give you some time for rebuttal.
Good morning, and may it please the court, Joe Busa on behalf of the government. As the case is now narrowed, there is agreement between all the parties that there is no constitutional problem with a statute that prohibits aiding and abetting the underlying transactional crime of prostitution, where that is a crime in the jurisdiction in which it takes place. So the only question for
where did you get that concession? Because I will say I read the plaintiff's brief to sort of imply that, but when the plaintiff was pushed today, I think he refused to concede that and said even if it's an aiding and abetting law, it still chills too much.
I guess I'm sorry, Your Honor. I took the opposite meaning from the colloquy this morning. I thought he had said if it was aiding and abetting, then it can permissibly be prohibited by statute. You know, we cite a number of cases in which the Supreme Court says that speech in aid of a crime is categorically exempted from the First Amendment. He's provided no argument saying why that line of cases wouldn't resolve the case if statute covers only aid.
I'll ask him it on
no, rebuttal,
of course.
I don't know what you mean when you say even if it's an aiding and abetting law. Isn't that the question?
I completely agree.
In my mind, it's not an aiding and abetting law. We know how to write them when we want to. This doesn't look like anything that I understand to be an aiding and abetting law. So I'm preparing this, that immediately tells me the government's got great concerns that the statute as actually written has problems. So let's make it something that it's not. Let's call it aiding and abetting, and maybe we can cause the court to believe that the reach of the statute is limited because we've called it something that it's not. There's nothing to suggest that it's aiding and abetting. It doesn't look like an aiding and abetting law. There's no legislative history that says it's an aiding and abetting law. And so my view as someone preparing the case is you just made something up, which would work for you if you could convince me that you're right, but it's not what the statute says.
Respectfully, Your Honor, we do disagree, and for several
with
reasons.
With what? That's what the statute says?
Oh.
Or you disagree?
We disagree that we're... So if we disagree with the position you just laid out, this is not an aiding and abetting statute. And so if I could just lay out the key features that we think show that this statute is limited to traditional principles of accomplice liability. So first, if you just take the canonical definitions of aiding and abetting from Black's Law Dictionary, it's to facilitate the commission of a crime or to promote its accomplishment. The same with Lefebvre and the Model Penal Code. And the Supreme Court in Abwahala said that the term facilitate has an equivalent meaning to terms like aid and abet. So first, just starting from the definitions of those
words.
What
did the Supreme Court say about promote in Williams? And a real
so
problem,
Williams,
the Supreme Court said, right?
Right. So in Williams, the Supreme Court
so
said.
So already we're falling away from where you'd like to be in aiding and abetting. The Supreme Court has flatly said promoting is, that's what you've got, and that's all we essentially have here, promote and facilitate. Supreme Court has said that's not enough. That's a problem.
Well,
that's all you've got.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. The Supreme Court said in Williams that promote on its own in a vacuum could be thought to have a very broad definition or a narrow definition focused on traditional principles of accomplice liability. Supreme Court there said, look to the statute in context, quote unquote. There the context.
No, they looked to the context at in whole.
I agree. You have to look at the
entire statute. That is, are there other words that limit the scope of the offense?
Oh,
the Supreme Court said in Williams there are other limiting words. And so therefore, even though promote would be a problem, if that's all was there, it's not a problem here because we can, in context, means there are other words which limit the sweep of the statute.
So, Your Honor, the Supreme Court in Williams didn't say the only contextual feature that could limit a word like promote to its narrow definition would be the nos curatur associis canon. Didn't say only that context would limit the word. Just said look to context, and that was the relevant context there. Here, we do have important textual and contextual indications that we're talking about transactional crimes, not general, you know, advocacy in favor of prostitution. So first, I start with the idea that we're talking about a criminal statute, we're talking about criminal intent. Then I turn to the phrase in the statute, promote the prostitution of another person, not promoting the concept of prostitution. Then there's the aggravated offense of promoting the prostitution of five or more persons. That's clearly transactional. And lastly...
Of what? What did you just say? I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. In the aggravated offense, in 2421A paragraph B, the statute speaks of promoting the prostitution of five or more persons. That just further underlines that we're talking about underlying criminal transactions, not the concept of prostitution as a whole. And lastly, and I don't think plaintiffs have ever given a response to this, is the affirmative defense in paragraph E.
Before you, please hold that. I make sure I understand something here. General promotion of prostitution is not here. But if someone actively promotes on their website the legalization of prostitution for the state of California,
mm-hmm.
How is that not promoting the prostitution of five or more persons in California?
Because it's just promoting prostitution in general as a concept.
No, it's not. It says, here's all my friends who are prostitutes in California. Here's 20 of them. I want to make it legal for them to engage in prostitution. So I'm advocating for this law. How does that not promote the prostitution? Awfully.
I'm going to list all 100 of my friends who are prostitutes.
Here's the list of their names. How would that not promote? Just straightforward reading of the text.
I feel very strongly they should have a right to prostitute if they want to.
They want to do it more. They'll be able to do it more if it's lawful.
So under a traditional dictionary definition where promote could just, you know, be encouragement in the least or sort of any degree of promotion, maybe one can consider that being promotion of the prostitution of a large number of people.
I don't think you need to stretch to say that under a dictionary definition that means promote. It's not a maybe, it does.
No, but But I guess my core point, though,
you want the super narrow Black's Law Dictionary.
Well, it's not that I want that. I think it's pretty clearly what Congress was intending. But even if you disagree with me about that.
Wait, how do we know Congress intended the Black's Law Dictionary definition?
Oh, because so contrary to some discussion I was having with Judge Edwards, there actually is legislative history saying that we're invoking traditional notions of accomplice liability.
Who's what was that legislative history?
So we laid that out in our brief, and we quote the specific pages where they talk about.
Who's they? Are we talking about a House report? Are you talking about members of Congress?
Floor debates during the passage of the bill, where key sponsors of the bill say this covers aiding and abetting. We're talking about accomplice liability. And specifically, Senators Blumenthal and Schumer say we are not talking about general promotion of prostitution or legalization. I'm sorry.
Is there some conference report that says this?
I don't believe there's a conference report that gets into that issue at all.
Is there a House or Senate report, committee report that says
that? I don't think any of the committee reports get into that.
But you're in the land in which most courts now are loath to say that legislative history, that works.
Where?
The question.
So, Your Honor, I want to be clear. We are not saying you should resolve this case on the basis of legislative history. Okay. I'm just trying to respond to the point that is there any indication of what Congress is doing here? Yes, there is.
Is there any indication of the text, structure, context, precedents, canons of construction?
That's exactly where I want to focus, Your Honor. And so if I can keep going through the text of the statute and the context of the statute that we think provides the narrowing features for a word like promote here.
Then we have to put aside the first canon, which is that plain language means plain way. Couple canons. Plain language means Congress means what it says or promotes instead of the narrower meaning. And two, when Congress knows how to say it and uses different words in another section, we assume there's different, that they intended a different meaning. I mean, when they have a statute that defines aid and abet and uses none of these verbs, aids, abets, counsels, commands, induces, or procures, none of which are in here, none of which promote or facilitate isn't in there. And we don't have the string of transactional verbs. And I just think promote is different from facilitating. I mean, they just naturally have different meanings. I understand why they use two words. So that this is, I understand your point, and this is the criminal statute, so it makes sense. Let's look at what these criminal meanings are. But then where I'm struggling is because Congress in criminal laws knows how to say aid and abet and didn't use a single one of those verbs. Knew after Williams that if it meant sort of transactional meanings to have sort of related string of verbs. It again didn't choose a string of verbs that suggests transactionalism. In fact, promote doesn't suggest transactionalism. And so that's, to be honest, I mean, I understand your job and what you're doing. I'm just struggling with what to do with those two canons. And even if we can debate whether Black's Law Dictionary trumps ordinary meaning in a plain language analysis, what do I do with the Congress knows how to say it, and it didn't do it here?
So on ordinary legal meaning, the Supreme Court has said that the ordinary meaning should be taken to be the ordinary legal meaning. And so we're discussing a criminal statute. You might look first to the ordinary meaning of that word is used in criminal law to address the question of what Congress said in 18.
Oh, wait, before you, that's great. So can you assure me that everywhere else that the word promote is used in 18 USC or in criminal provisions, 21 USC, it only means, well, it surely can't mean promote prostitution. So it only means what?
I think in general, we would start from the presumption that it's using the word promote as it's used in any number of state accomplice liability statutes.
Oh, wait, I thought we were going to assume, we don't assume it. Do we know how often promote appears elsewhere in the criminal code?
I don't have that for you, and I also don't want to take a firm position that literally every single time it's used, that's what's going to mean. Here's how you can resolve this
scenario. Or even multiple times that it's, I mean, are there other places in the criminal code, I keep wanting to say 18 USC, but I know it's broader than that, where promote has that meaning?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I don't have that information for you. I wish I did, but here's how I think you can resolve the case narrowly. Promoting prostitution is its own special legal term of art. As noted the first time this case came on appeal and as defined in Black's Law Dictionary, promoting prostitution is pandering. There's a very specific legal meaning in this context. And we think that's the legal meaning you should ascribe to the statute. And if I could just turn to the affirmative defense in paragraph E, of 2421A.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Because I think it's a very strong contextual and structural indication that we have the right construction of the statute. If plaintiffs were right that promoting prostitution of another person included general advocacy in favor of prostitution, then Congress would be speaking out of both sides of its mouth. On the one hand, in paragraph A, it would have criminalized that conduct, despite the constitutional concerns that might arise. But then paragraph E, it would have provided an affirmative defense because, to our knowledge, there is no jurisdiction in the United States that purports to make it criminal to generally advocate for decriminalization of prostitution. Plaintiffs have certainly identified no such jurisdiction.
Well, hang on a second. So if Congress passed a statute that says it's unlawful to promote prostitution, it's an affirmative defense to show that your promotion of prostitution was lawful. Under that theory, that would be perfectly fine. So Congress can ban speech as long as it makes an affirmative defense to show that this is constitutionally protected speech.
I am not making that argument.
I thought that's it. It's unlawful to promote prostitution. Affirmative defense, unless you can show promoting prostitution was lawful in that state. How is that different from the statute?
I must have misunderstood your question, Your Honor. I'm not sure of what you're driving at.
It's more concise.
Okay.
It is unlawful to promote prostitution. If you want me to add computer, it's unlawful to use a computer service to promote prostitution. One.
And just clarify that question.
Uh-huh.
Do you intend the hypo to include promotion to mean general advocacy, not as limited by traditional notions of accomplice liability? I'm trying to get the hypo correct in my mind.
I'm Congress. Who knows what I intend?
Okay.
All right. So, right. There'll be a couple floor statements that say that, though.
Okay.
All right. So, it is unlawful to use a computer service to promote prostitution.
Mm-hmm.
It is an affirmative defense to demonstrate that promoting prostitution is lawful where you did it.
Mm-hmm.
That's constitutional.
Well, yes, of course. Oh, I mean, provided that promotion, there would be limited to aiding and abetting a transactional crime.
Just said promoting prostitution.
Okay. Right. And so we know that.
Judge Walker has a different answer.
Sorry, Your Honor. Please go.
The statute just says it's illegal to promote prostitution
of another person.
No,
it's prostitution.
It's illegal to promote prostitution, period, full stop. That would ban someone from running a website that says, I think the state of Maryland should decriminalize prostitution. You would have made that a federal felony with that.
I am not here saying that is constitutional. No, of course.
Okay, so now if I change it to say it is illegal to use a computer system to promote prostitution of another person, no further definition of promote, and then had your affirmative defense, you think that's perfectly fine. There's no other verbs.
And facilitate is not in there. It's just
I've given you the full text.
I think we'd say, look, it's certainly a permissible construction to say promoting prostitution has a specific meaning, a longstanding meaning going back centuries, meaning pandering. And if you limit it to that, it would clearly be constitutional. And because it can be so limited, it must be.
So I'll make sure.
What does facilitate and promote add to your argument that your argument lacks in the last type of?
So we already know from the Supreme Court in Abu Hala that facilitate has an equivalent meaning to aid and abet. And then you start thinking, well, if that has the equivalent meaning, maybe Congress might have chose the narrower definition of promote. Secondly, facilitate and promote frequently go together in defining what accomplice liability is. I mean, again, Black's Law Dictionary, facilitate the commission of a crime or promote its accomplishment. Model Penal Code, aiding the commission of a crime with the purpose of promoting or facilitating the commission of the offense. Lefebvre, to give assistance or encouragement with the intent to thereby promote or facilitate the commission of the crime.
And all that reads promote and facilitate the same way we might read the phrase rise and shine.
Exactly.
Right? I just can't remember. It's like one thing.
Yeah, and maybe it's a diptych might be the right thing. I don't know what the technical term is, but that's exactly right, Your Honor. And it carries with it
here's what I'm worried about, too, with I'm talking about 2421 capital A. If Congress passed a statute that says it's illegal in interstate commerce to own, manage, or operate a library with the intent to promote the prostitution of another person. That's okay.
Another person is in there?
With the intent to promote, yes, it's...
And it's facilitate or promote?
No, I'm not.
I'm sorry.
Let me try one more time.
I'm sorry.
Well, it sounds like our sound system is not working so well.
No, so, I'm sure it's my fault.
I'm giving you the interstate commerce stuff. So it is illegal to own, manage, or operate a library with the intent to promote the prostitution of another person. And you can have your affirmative defense.
Sure. I guess if we read promote as carrying the traditional notion of pandering, that specific meaning in that context, then yes.
So the only actus reus that's needed is owning a library, owning, managing, or operating a library. If you do it with a bad intent, Congress can ban that.
That intense.
No action has happened. No actual promote. This is what the statute says. It is illegal to own, operate, or manage a library with the intent to promote the prostitution of another person. It doesn't say, and some step is taken towards the prostitution of another person. It says it is illegal to own the library with a bad intent or manage. You're just hired as the lead librarian and you have a bad intent. But you don't do anything. And you say the First Amendment says that's fine?
So, Your Honor, if I set up a collection of information, whether it's online or in my house, and I do it specifically to aid and abet the crime of another person,
See, the problem is the aid and abet definition you want to use is all the is the actus reus, aiding and abetting.
It makes it a narrower case. You'd love to be there.
Right. You'd love to have that actus reus, but the only actus reus in 2421A is owning a computer system. And I don't know why it would change, and I'm going to change it to, own, manage, or operate. Own, manage, or operate a library with a bad intent. And that bad intent is I would conspire to attend to do this bad thing. That's why I'm here. But in fact, it's all legitimate library stuff.
So it's
not a Fairfax County Library content, but I have a bad intent. I'm just really inept or really stupid, but I have owned, operated, or managed a library with this criminalized intent. Congress can't do that, can it?
No, my apologies. I have always read this statute with the actus reus.
Can Congress do what I said?
Yeah, let's get
just
that one
that.
Behind us.
Right, and then I'll you can tell if I'm misreading the statute.
No,
I definitely want to hear.
It's like our hypotheticals, but I'm curious to your answer. Can Congress do that? Yes or no, in your view? I'm not saying in my mind that ends the case, but I'm curious to hear your answer.
And so just to be clear, the actus reus in the hypothetical is owning, managing, or operating
a library. In interstate commerce.
With the intent.
In interstate commerce. With the intent to
promote.
Pander.
To promote. With the intent. Make the intent as bad as you want.
Sure.
With the intent to murder a prostitute.
Sure.
Give me your bad intent, all right?
Mm-hmm.
That's my intent.
Yep.
But all I've done is own, operate, or manage an interactive computer service, and a library, and there is no other requirement that anything about that operation have anything to do with what's in my head.
And so, in this hypothetical, just to be very clear, nothing about the library service is actually pandering. It's just the intent.
I'm owning, managing, or operating a library with a really bad intent, but no other actors.
I have to apologize, Your Honor. That is not a question I've considered before. I don't think it's something I'm prepared to take a definitive stance on in the absence of briefing or research on that.
It's worrisome, isn't it? Can we at least agree it's worrisome?
Well, it's confusing at the least because...
Just confusing.
Why is it confusing?
Because
I don't know why you wouldn't have thought about it.
Because plaintiffs have raised...
I mean, this is your opportunity. Those are the kinds of questions in this First Amendment arena. Came in very confidently saying, this is only aid and abet. Well, you might assume a judge would push back with exactly the kind of question that my colleague is raising, and I would have supposed that you would have an answer for it.
So, Your Honor, I've always read the statute when it says that it's raised being owning, managing, and operating an interactive computer service with the intent to promote facilitate or promote the prostitution of another purpose, another person. I've always read the owning, management, and operation as promoting and facilitating the prostitution of another purpose.
But that's not, wait, then it just says with the intent to.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's nothing after it.
What?
I mean, just grammatically, this is what, something I've, I'm, I'm,
no, I know, please.
I've just been, I've been struggling with this. But it uses with the intent to promote or facilitate the prostitution of another person as a mens rea, just like it's used right. in the Travel Act. That's just a mens rea. The same thing in the Travel Act, but then the Travel Act, of course, has bad actus reus, too.
So here, the statute also covers attempt and conspiracy, and I would assume that because...
So it's all come before the intent. Statement.
Right, but if attempt itself or conspiracy would require some sort of action towards the commission of the crime,
the action is owning,
I would assume the base would have also done that.
Can we pull up the statute and look at it together? Because
yes.
The problem here is it begins whoever, and then it has the actus reus, owns, manages, operates, or conspires or attempts to do so. So that that refers back to owns, manages, or operates.
Right.
It's operating on the conspires or attempts is on those verbs. And then we have a comma, and then we have an intent language, which is much like the intent language in the Travel Act. It's just the intent language. She'll be fine. That's what I'm worried about with this statute. It doesn't, the only actus reus, as I read it, and I can't figure out how I can read it otherwise, I've tried, is to own, manage, or operate, or attempt, or conspire, own, manage, or operate an interactive computer service.
No, I don't think plaintiffs here have brought this suit to cover the fanciful hypothetical in which someone does their best to aid and abet the prostitution of another person.
I think they have brought this suit to say that a statute that has an actus reus only of owning, managing, they'll tell me if I'm wrong, of only owning, operating, or managing an interactive computer service with a bad intent. He said this during his opening argument. That violates the First Amendment. Fanciful, it's what Congress wrote here, unless you can tell me how to diagram this sentence to move part of the intent up into two or three lines up into the actus reus.
I think I would start from the fact that Congress here is writing a criminal statute that's targeted at the prostitution of another person. It's using words that invoke core concepts of aiding and abetting liability. And one of those core concepts, of course, is taking an actus reus that would, in fact, facilitate or promote the commission of the crime.
I guess
so
it's
inartful drafting.
Backpage, they wanted to get Backpage, and what Backpage did, as you allege and describe, and I'm not obviously making any definitive determinations on this, is set up own, manager, operate an interactive computer service.
So, Your Honor, the way
designing it in their heads, planning for it to promote prostitution. That's at least the allegations.
So, and in fact,
brief.
Taking steps.
And in fact, doing it. Tell me where 2421A says, and in fact, they do it.
Right. Obviously, the statute doesn't say that, Your Honor. I guess what I would say, just to continue, is you start with the core concepts of aiding and abetting liability, and you think Congress is acting reasonably and importing those concepts here. Secondly, I would focus on the affirmative defense, where it says that it's an affirmative defense if the promotion or facilitation of prostitution is legal. They're talking about the actual promotion or facilitation, not just acting with an intent to do something, but in fact doing nothing to promote or facilitate. If the affirmative defense goes to an action that in fact promotes or facilitates, I would think it'd be reasonable to read the offense as described in paragraph A as doing the same. And more.
Sorry,
the point,
I'm still just struggling grammatically. So, tell me how you read this sentence. Conspires or so owns, operate, and manage with intent to do so, comma, with the intent is to promote with the intent to promote or facilitate part of that intent language.
You know, I had a great case if the heading in the statute that you're pushing, instead of saying promoting or facilitating, said aiding and abetting.
So, Your Honor,
it doesn't say that.
Many.
And the problem is we've seen so many of these cases, and aiding and abetting is a well-understood notion, and the words are used when Congress means to use.
So, Your Honor, many state statutes provide for accomplice liability, aiding and abetting, without using that phrase. We cite them in our brief. They say anyone who aids the commission of a crime with the intent to promote or facilitate the commission of that crime shall be held liable. They don't use the word magic word.
States might, but Congress has a definition of aiding and abetting. And sometimes they will still put aiding and abetting language in a substantive statute as well. I give you that. Are you aware, does Congress commonly, when creating a new substantive crime and wanting to wrap aiding and abetting into that, not just rely on existing 18 U.S.C. definition, do they commonly use words that have no relationship to the statutory definition of aiding and abetting already in 18 U.S.C.? Like, do they pull at least one of them out most of the time?
I can't give you an intelligent answer to that as to like a fair characterization of, in the broad sweep when Congress does this, what sorts of words does it use? All I know is the words they've used here are in the canonical definitions of aiding and abetting liability.
Well, promotes not. You're relying on the promote prostitution.
Yes, of course it is, Your Honor. No, mm-hmm. To be clear, facilitate and promote are both in Black's Law Dictionary.
Well, this is promote or facilitate, not and. This is or. Doesn't that mean they have different meanings?
So Black's Law Dictionary actually says that here's the definition of aid or abet. By the way, that's a separate definition for aid and abet that says see aid or abet.
Mm-hmm.
And then Black's Law Dictionary also talks about how the terms aid and abet are often thought as having overlapping meanings, although mm-hmm. sometimes they could have slightly different senses, but they all invoke core concepts mm-hmm. of criminal law. The key point is that all of those core concepts of criminal law limit the statute so that it presents no constitutional defect. And, you know, we think we have the best reading of the statute, but you don't have to agree with us on that to rule in our favor. All you have to conclude is that we have a permissible understanding of this statute that would avoid the need to resolve any First Amendment questions in this case. And I think that'd be the simplest grounds on which to resolve this case. And the last parting thought I want to make.
So just Black's Law Dictionary actually has promoter. I'm not seeing promote.
So it says,
promoter, a person who encourages or incites. Encourages.
So, Your Honor,
I'd like to make prostitution lawful in California for my friends. And then it has promoting prostitution. And then we go over to pandering. Pander is one who engages in pandering. And then you have the pandering definition that I think you probably want, like recruiting a prostitute. Right? Or the act or offense of distributing or selling or textual or visual materials. Openly advertised to appeal to the recipient's sexual interest. That's another definition of pandering.
So, Your Honor, the definition I'm working with here is the Black's Law Dictionary definition available in the online Westlaw version where it says there's some quotes on it. Right. I don't know what version you're dealing with. I apologize. There might be different versions. Here's the exact quote.
Well, it's the same one that was in effect at the time they passed the statute.
So here's the exact quote that I have.
That was in effect at the time they passed the statute. The one you're quoting from?
It would have been extremely close. This is a 2018 statute. I think this is the most recent version of Black's Law. So it might be off by a couple of years. I can't imagine the definition has evolved radically in that time. But here's the exact definition. Quote, aiding and abetting is, quote, to assist or facilitate the commission of a crime or to promote its accomplishment.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the exact definition in the Model Penal Code, promote and facilitate, both there together.
Mm-hmm.
Lefebvre, both there together. The Supreme Court, citing, I believe it's the Black's Law Dictionary case and authority in that case, says, yeah, facilitate, just relying on that, has an equivalent meaning to words like aid and abet. The exact same reasoning would apply to the word promote, especially when we know that pandering is also known as promoting prostitution in many state statutes around the country, as defined in Black's Law Dictionary.
Are they talking there about the action verb?
So I believe that sometimes accomplice liability statutes will use promote and facilitate in the verb component of the actions necessary, and sometimes we'll use it in the intent component, and frequently use it both together.
Mm-hmm.
The last thought I want to leave you with, unless of course there's any other questions, which I'm happy to take, is that if, as is true, general accomplice liability statutes throughout the United States say it is a crime to promote the crime of another person, and if prostitution is widely criminalized throughout the United States, then if promote had the widest possible meaning and that plaintiffs want to ascribe it to it, it would seem by their logic that all of those statutes would be unconstitutional in the First Amendment. They've cited no cases at all of any court ever saying so. And by the way, those general statutes are all about, you know, general, like, aiding the commission of a crime. Here we're talking about a much more specific thing, operating an interactive computer service. We think that we have the best interpretation of the statute, but at a minimum, it is feasible.
Sorry, they're aiding or abetting. They're not aiding or abetting the owning, managing, or operating. That's not what they're doing. They're intending to aid or abet the own, manager, operator. I bet you there aren't a lot of state statutes.
I guess
like
I'm sorry.
I bet you there aren't a lot of state statutes like that.
Well, no, the state statutes are much more broad. They actually cover this already.
They have the only actus reus is owning or operating a computer system with a bad intent.
In those general statutes, it's a general accomplice liability statute, and it prohibits aiding the commission of a crime.
Okay.
Which covers, of course, this plus anything else under the sun that falls within traditional notions of aiding and abetting liability. This statute doesn't criminalize anything new. It's already criminal under state statutes.
So if I have a, what do they call it, computer geeks business. A computer geeks, the people that help repair computers. Okay. And I have a contract with someone who owns a computer, interactive computer system. And I repair it, you know, it breaks often. I'm sort of pretty there. I'm on call, I'm on contract, and sort of every week I'm in there, something's broken, I got to fix it up. It's a very popular interactive computer system. And the owner of that interactive computer system has a really bad intent that its interactive computer system be used to promote or facilitate the prostitution of another person. In fact, nothing on the computer system does that, but the owner has this really bad intent.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it. I'm the owner of computer, I'm the computer geek tech.
Okay.
I know it, but I've checked, there's nothing on this computer system that looks at all like promoting prostitution. Have I aided and abetted that crime? Because I'm constantly repairing this interactive computer system that is operated with this intent to promote or facilitate the prostitution of another person?
I'm not sure, Your Honor. I want to consult, you know, hundreds of years of case law about aiding and abetting liability under the specific facts of that case to see if repairing that computer system with the right mens rea would fall within traditional notions of accomplice liability.
Well, I know he's got the bad intent. Or I know I've got the bad. He knows I've got the bad intent. I forget who I am, but I, let's say I'm running it now because I can't really compare it. I can't hardly turn a computer on. So I certainly can't be the repair person. Now, if we change the hypothetical and in fact, the person with a bad intent has, it's what you would allege Backpage has done, or since there's, I guess, litigation about that, we'll just call it badwebsite.com.
Sure.
Bad promoting and facilitating prostitution.com. Okay. And so not only does I have that terrible intent, but in fact, the content of the website, their interactive computer system, is pretty bad. It looks like a bulletin board to match people up. And it even has, here's how to get fake passports if you're interested in transporting girls. And I'm the tech, and I come in and I know the intent, and I know the content, and I come in and operate and manage and work on and repair that system every week. That would be aiding and abetting with that knowledge, would it not?
It sounds like it's in the zone. Again, before giving you a definitive answer, I of course want to consult case law about how aiding.
I thought aiding and abetting. So you're not clear whether helping to keep the computer system going is with knowledge.
I would think so, Your Honor, but again, I have to admit,
if aiding and abetting is getting to be this ambiguous, then we've got another problem. I think we should have thought that would be.
No, so I don't think so, Your Honor. You know, the Supreme Court and Humanitarian Law Project says, look, the fact that there can be close cases doesn't mean that there's a facial constitutional problem with the statute. That's what as-applied challenges are for.
I don't think the tech repairing the computer system with full knowledge of what it was doing and what it was intended to do was a close case.
But. No, it could be well within. I just don't happen to know. I apologize, Your Honor, because I haven't consulted the facts of, I haven't consulted the case law with.
What is an example of aiding and abetting then?
I apologize.
What is it? Well, you're pretty confident that promoting or facilitating prostitution, are you confident what counts as aiding and abetting the prostitution of another person?
I'm confident that what Backpage did and things like Backpage would count. I can also imagine.
Okay, but that doesn't help us interpret a general statute. So, I mean, can you tell me?
Sure.
Dolly, I had thought your whole argument was that aiding or abetting added clarity, but now I don't understand why. I thought my tech hypo was easy.
So of course it adds clarity, Your Honor. There's hundreds of years of case law to help figure out what counts as aiding and abetting and what doesn't. And of course, in the specific facts in any given case, you would consult that case law and come to a determination. The only issue for this court is whether the statute covers aiding and abetting or not, not what specific things actually constitute aiding and abetting or not. That can be handled in as-applied cases. This is really just about statutory interpretation. Does this statute cover aiding and abetting an underlying crime of exchanging sex for money? And we've provided you all the reasons, both just about the definitions of the words themselves and also textual and contextual indications as to why we think that's true. But again, all you have to conclude is that it's a permissible interpretation. And then under the canon of constitutional avoidance, we would win this case.
I've asked you a lot of questions. My colleagues have any more?
No.
You mind if I ask you? Sorry.
Oh, of course.
One more. No, it was on this.
My train's not till one.
This. Oh, good. We have lots of time. The argument they make about the change to the scope of Section 230 immunity.
Yes.
And they have this sort of selective withdrawal argument. And what I'm a little confused about is that the prior immunity, by its terms, didn't apply if it was a violation of federal law.
Correct.
Right. And promoting or facilitating aiding or abetting the prostitution in interstate commerce, the interstate commerce component, was unlawful even before this FOSTA was enacted.
Correct.
In fact, you say in your brief, and they say, I keep getting confused about this, that FOSTA didn't change what was illegal. It just sort of changed, I guess, who can prosecute or civil remedies?
That's absolutely correct, Your Honor. Yes, everything that's prosecutable, I believe, under 2421A was already prosecutable under the Travel Act. The main reason for enacting 2421A as a separate section is as an easy cross-reference to exempt only certain state crimes from Section 230C's protections, not everything under the Travel Act. But of course, it does more than just that, and I don't want to, discount that. Of course, it provides for civil liability. It provides for, I believe, higher punishments than were available under the Travel Act itself.
And put aside the civil remedy, then the same thing could have been accomplished by just amending 230, just as to the immunity withdrawal. Amending it to say it doesn't extend to anything contrary to federal or state law or violation. I think it's a violation of federal law or state law. That's effectively what's happened as to allowing.
As to
230 was an immunity, was before this was an immunity, not just civil suits, but criminal prosecutions by states.
That's correct, with the qualification that it depends on the scope of 230C, which of course is an act of litigation in the U.S. Supreme Court.
Right.
But what Congress was doing was clarifying that the First Circuit in the Backpage case had misunderstood the scope of 230C, and it fixed that in 230E to allow state prosecutions of state crimes where that constitutes.
I don't think they misunderstood. It does say federal law in there, so I think, but it's Congress decided it wanted to change that. So
well, Congress said it was clarifying, but I understand that could be a.
That's a lot
line.
Of clarifying, but and so that so. So certainly then as to federal law, there was no giving and then taking back of immunity. No. And then what I'm worried about is sort of constitutionalizing the concept of you grant an immunity and then Congress can never amend it, right? That's a big thing to do. But they do raise a sort of selectivity argument. What am I to do with, the Congress can't sort of pick on somebody, like it couldn't, I assume, have amended to say, and Backpage doesn't get it.
Right.
And maybe, I don't know. Maybe
I'm not, here say, to defend, not here to defend
right.
that proposition.
Right, no. But isn't that, so how would you answer an argument that says that's effectively Backpage and its relatives can't do this anymore, as to state criminal prosecution?
Congress is entitled to make the determination that there are certain crimes that are so troubling that, we need to get all our law enforcement partners on board. We can't just have federal prosecution. This is the purpose behind the statute. I mean, I think all 50 state attorneys general sent a letter to Congress saying, please untie our hands. We need to go after these people that are sex trafficking children. I think Congress is perfectly entitled to make a determination that, you know, in addition to federal prosecution, state prosecution for such things should be allowed. I don't know of any precedent that would call into question that judgment.
Well, now I do have a question. Sorry. Just out of curiosity, the plaintiff mentioned that there haven't been any state prosecutions. Is that your sense as well?
I have no sense of that, Your Honor. I mean, it would depend on... I just don't have that information at my fingertips. To my knowledge, there's no reporting requirement that the states, when they prosecute somebody, invoke this exception to 230C's immunity, but they then report it to us. So I just do not have information about that. I apologize.
I mean, I know this either, but do you know if the civil remedies provision has been able to be used? I mean, this is a statute, it's a lot because this statute's been around since 2018, and it's usually these First Amendment challenges happen pretty fast.
Right.
I'm just curious as to, we're 4 years in, and do you know if there have been civil remedy actions?
I cannot recall coming across a reported case in which I've read about that being invoked.
Okay. Doesn't mean it hasn't happened.
It does not mean that it hasn't happened.
For sure, for sure. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Your Honors. We ask that you affirm.
We'll give you 4 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'll try and be brief. I mentioned at the outset of my argument that it was remarkable that neither the district court nor the government cited any of the First Amendment cases involving regulation of the internet, but I also noted that there was one small exception to that that I would hope to get back to, and that's what I want to talk about just for a minute now. The only reference to any of those cases that I alluded to is at page 40 of the government's brief, where it cites Ashcroft versus Free Speech Coalition for the proposition that courts thus decide what a statute prohibits, not what it could prohibit. Now, leave aside for a minute that that's not what Ashcroft versus Free Speech Coalition says. I think it's important to recognize what that case did. It said that that law is a stark example of why we allow facial challenges to speech regulations. And then it went on to hold that that law could apply to even a Hollywood production of Romeo and Juliet. Now, on that basis, it found the law to be overly broad. The way that ties into this case specifically is that the statute that was upheld in Williams was passed in reaction to Free Speech Coalition versus Ashcroft. And the language in Williams that was upheld was especially that string of verbs that explained what the crime was. So the backdrop for adopting FOSTA is that Congress after FOSTA, Congress after Williams, and after the Supreme Court had said that the terms promote and facilitate when used in isolation are capable of multiple and wide-ranging meanings, Congress then adopted a statute regulating internet speech that simply uses those terms in isolation, which means it specifically undid what Congress had tried to do in saving the PROTECT Act. Congress then added a provision to the Mann Act, which chose to exclude the verbs that had existed in that law, narrowing its scope, since 1910. And, in the midst of Supreme Court law that is unchallenged, that says that laws regulating speech must be drafted with precision. And on top of all of that, Congress focused on, in FOSTA, not only adopting these amorphous penalties, but doing so that increases risks for online intermediaries, creating heckler's veto, or worse, a prosecutor's veto. In the words of Professor Eric Goldman, FOSTA represents the worst of both worlds. And as a result, it's unconstitutional and should be enjoined.
Let me ask a couple questions. One is, you set aside your ex post facto argument, and if you set aside your 230 immunity being required, so just put those aside for a second. If we adopt the government's narrow aiding and abetting reading of FOSTA, do you concede that there's no constitutional problem with the statute?
Well, there's a constitutional problem in that there has to be language in the statute to get to that understanding. And that was, it's what the Supreme Court said.
But don't don't, if we read, I know you think we shouldn't read that language in, maybe we won't read that language in. But if we read the statute, if we read it narrowly to only include aiding and abetting, do you concede that there's no constitutional problem?
You're asking about, I'm sorry, just so I understand, are you asking about the mens rea or an act?
Yeah.
I guess well, mainly the mens rea, but the whole, actually, both, I guess.
Right. 1591.
The government started its argument, you heard him, the government started its argument and he said, if we're right about how to interpret the statute, the plaintiffs concede the First Amendment has not been violated. And do you agree?
Well, I'm not trying to evade your question, Your Honor. Is that it seems like the question is, if we assume the law is constitutional, then it's constitutional.
No. If we assume that it's limited to aiding and abetting.
And that's where the disconnect that Judge Millett was focusing on between actus reus and mens rea becomes critical. Because it doesn't define a criminal actus reus other than owning, operating, or managing an online, an interactive computer service. And so they trying to say it then constitutes aiding and abetting makes no sense because it's simply saying we are, in the hypothetical proposal by Judge Millett, owning, managing, or operating a library with really bad intent.
Okay, let me.
Aiding and abetting intent.
I'm going to read the Mann Act or the key part of the Mann Act. I think this is the text. And I'm going to stop when it gets to the mens rea. Okay? I'm going to stop when it gets to the intent. Whoever knowingly transports any individual in interstate or foreign commerce or in any territory or possession of the United States with intent, and then it defines the intent. So leaving out the interstate commerce book, whoever knowingly transports any individual, that's the actus reus. Is that right?
I'm not sure which section you're reading from. I was looking at the section of 2422A, which applies to anyone who knowingly persuades, induces, entices, or coerces any individual to travel interstate commerce to engage in prostitution. Again, it's an example of where the law includes in the actus reus a more precise definition.
So I think this is...
You're 2421.
20, yeah.
You referring to now?
2421.
18 U.S.C. 2421, the general provision.
Yeah.
Whoever knowingly transports any individual.
Oh, that's not what it is.
And then there's the interstate commerce.
2421A, small a? Yeah. Okay.
Whoever knowingly transports any individual. Then there's the interstate commerce hook and followed by the mens rea. So whoever knowingly transports any individual is the actus reus. Is that right?
It is.
And you have a constitutional right to travel, the Supreme Court has said, right?
Yes.
How is the Mann Act constitutional?
You have a constitutional right to transport, First Amendment right or constitutional right to transport someone else?
I think that's where the focus on whether or not this is a regulation of speech becomes important because of the imprecision around speech. Knowing whether or not your speech falls within that category is a much more difficult and nuanced question than whether or not you have physically transported someone across straight lines.
I appreciate that.
Any other questions? Thanks to both counsel. We kept you up much longer than we anticipated, but we appreciate your help working through this complicated statute and the cases submitted.